young Benjamin Franklin was summoned by his king to go to the frontier and to interact with the Native Americans. Now, keep in mind, this is decades before the Revolutionary War. So Ben Franklin is still very much a subject of the crown. And they tell him, go there and interact and trade and create alliances, create military alliances. Well, Benjamin Franklin had no idea what he was in for. Neither did the British, because if they had, they may never have sent him. Now, I'll get back to Ben in just a second. But first, let me tell you why I love unity so much. There are hundreds of reasons why, but one of the reasons, or two of the reasons, that I love Unity Renaissance so much is diversity. Ever since I came here 25 years ago, whether it was age differences, race differences, sexual orientation, gender, color, creed, what have you, Unity was always welcoming, always saw the light in each and every individual. And Glenn Parry Aparicio, whose book we're going to be studying this week in a four-week course study, says that America's sacred purpose, its sacred purpose, is to find unity in diversity. That's where we are. The other thing I love about unity is that we're not afraid of our shadows. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, the great psychologist Carl Jung in the last century coined the term the shadow. And the shadow is that part of ourselves that is disowned. It's that part of ourselves that we don't want to look at. It's usually associated with shame or with blame. It represents the hidden side of our human psyche, and it can apply to individuals and collectives. It can apply to a country, and it often does. And what I love about what we've done here, in fact, what Reverend Paula has talked about from this very stage, is the American shadow. We have talked about racism and bigotry, white privilege, etc. Not without getting into the politics, but talking about that shadow element that is part of our national story. And we've even had classes here. Donna Shannon and others have led classes on Jesus and the Disinherited. Howard Thurman, the great African-American mystic, who was the single greatest influence on Martin Luther King. We have studied his work, and we've studied slavery and racism, and we've studied America's original sin. And we can see that racial and gender bias and discrimination and genocide have always been a shadow element in the founding of this nation. Now, this is not about guilt. This is not about shame. A lot of people don't like to talk about racism. We're not told not to talk about race in school. It may upset some people. But heck, you know, we've all lived other lifetimes. I might have been a slave in another lifetime. I might have been a slave master in another lifetime. All of us could have played those roles. It's about understanding the shadow element in our country and in all of us. Because we're going through a few things right now in the nation that beg us to look at this shadow, that beg us to look at America's original sin. So, how you feeling about the country these days, huh? All warm and fuzzy? Kumbaya, we're all together, right? All is one, correct? You know, I was up in Connecticut last week seeing a friend of mine, good Roman Catholic guy. We've had a great relationship for decades. And he said, you know, Chris, I've been feeling this anxiety, this disquietude, whether I'm in the boardroom or on the road. There just seems to be this anger, this simmering disquietude in the American soul. And I said, you think? What have we been through in the last few years? Two very contentious presidential cycles. January 6th, Capitol riots in 2021. COVID. False, you know, accusations of false news going back and forth across the aisle. And yet, in some ways, you know, the phrase that I love is use everything to your advancement. So why is that in the American soul right now? We're all feeling it. In some ways, whether it's directly impacted our lives or not, we are feeling that collective PTSD. But it's there for a reason. It's there to shine a light on that shadow element. That's our spiritual lesson. And Glenn Parry, and again, in this extraordinary book, Original Politics, Making America Sacred Again, which is really not so much about politics, he says, we have a responsibility to leave a sacred America to coming generations. Now, all of those kids in these classrooms today, all those youngsters, what are we going to leave to that next generation? What are our thoughts, our consciousness, and our actions going to leave to this next generation? Will we leave a sacred America as divided and as polarized as we are today? Parry says, in order to do that, it's going to be necessary to piece together the forgotten fragments of history that are currently keeping the nation divided. The most significant forgotten piece is the profound effect Native America had on the founding values of this nation. That's a mouthful. That's a very big piece. It's kind of ironic, isn't it, that the original inhabitants, the indigenous people here in America, are the last ones to be fully included and appreciated for their role in both shaping the nation's core spirituality and the founding of the American Republic? It's time to look at our original sin. Now, back to Ben. So Ben Franklin sent out to the frontiers, and in those days, the frontier was western Pennsylvania, Ohio, parts of western Virginia, go out and negotiate with these Native Americans and work with them and create military alliances. So Franklin and his cohorts do that, and what do they find? They find a society, no kings, no classes, no tariffs, no courts. They find a society that venerates inclusivity and equality and democratic principles. He engages a society that's not so interested in land ownership. And when disagreements arise, they're not negotiated from the top down. They create a circle and they pass a walking stick. And guess what? Women are at these circles as well. They share in the political power. So Ben Franklin and his cohorts are receiving lessons about personal liberty, about natural rights, about economic equality, about religious and political freedom, all the while seeing that the Native Americans were acknowledging the sacred nature of the land and the profound interconnectedness of life. Now, sometimes we are taught, I certainly was taught in school, that all of these high-minded ideals of the Enlightenment came from, you know, over in Europe. The white men brought it all over here, and that's how we created all of this. And look, there's some truth to that, and I could run some names by you that would bore you to tears. Rousseau, Locke, Francis Bacon. I won't go down that path, Valerie. I promised you I would not do that today. I'm a bit of a history wonk, I apologize for that. But it would also be misleading to say that these American colonists did not learn, or it would be misleading to say that they did not learn about these inalienable rights and the natural rights of man unless they had interacted with Native Americans. Because, you see, the concept of natural rights is derived at least in part from Native Americans and the value that they placed on life and liberty. So as time went on and Franklin is still going out to the frontier, in fact, he is made the Indian Commissioner of Pennsylvania, he starts to establish diplomatic ties. Now, at the same time, they're becoming less enchanted with the motherland, not so hot on the king and queen because they're being subjugated. They're being taxed without representation. They're feeling that they're a separate kind of people than the European monarchs had given them. So as Franklin starts interacting more with Native Americans, he strikes up a great relationship with Chief Canassatego. Now, Canassatego was an Onondagan chief, a sachem, and his tribe was one of six tribes that created what they called the Iroquois Confederacy, which were individual tribes that had created a confederation to protect their interests, especially against the Spanish and the French and the British. And Canassatego was kind of intimating to Franklin that, you know, this is something you may wish to consider. So one time, Franklin meets with Canassatego, and Canassatego gives him an arrow. And then he takes it back from him. Takes the arrow, and he breaks it over. Then a moment later, he reaches for 13 arrows, and he takes them, and he attempts to break them over his knee, and he cannot. Well, Franklin was not a slow guy. He kind of got the metaphor right then and there. And although the American colonies were already starting to move towards independence, this inflection, this this reflections from Native Americans started to sink deep. Now, one other thing about history, we all learned about it in school, right? What was the flashpoint of the Revolutionary War that gave us freedom? Well, the Boston Tea Party, right? And we were all taught that, you know, patriots, rebels, went on those ships and dressed as Indians, threw the tea into the harbor. That was the spark that started our Revolutionary War. Well, did these patriots just happen to walk by a costume shop to put on Mohawk headdress? Pass by a haberdashery shop and just wanted to dress up as Indians? Now, a lot of people think, well, they did it to be incognito, and that's not the case at all. They were making a statement. The Mohawks and other Native tribes had no kings, had no class system, had no tariffs, had no courts. They lived in accord with what Thomas Paine later called the natural rights of man. And as such, they were the perfect symbol of an American rebellion. You know, our relationship with Native Americans over time has been both a veneration and a persecution. But look how they used the Mohawks as a symbol of, we are a free and different people, and we are going to rebel as such. Now, of course, we all know what happened over those next 200 to 250 years, and can't go into that here now. I want to say many are quick to point out, and I think they're correct, that not everything the American Indian did was noble or absent of violence or crimes. They did not live in a utopian, warless societies. But the greater sin is what happened to them in the ensuing 200 to 250 years. And we know the stories, the broken promises, the broken agreements, the greed and the discrimination, the genocide of the Trail of Tears, where Andrew Jackson pushed them out of their lands in Southern America and pushed them out to the West, and many died on the way. The brutality of the Indian Wars out West. And of course, we're also aware of the fact that again, many of these particular agreements were broken, and they were pushed onto endlessly shrinking lands with disparate tribes. This is the quintessence of the American shadow. This is the nation's original sin, and it demands acknowledgement and healing. Now, perhaps we have seen some of that over the last 50 to 60 years, whether we're talking about New Thought and mystical circles, whether we're talking about Congress, whether we're talking about even professional sports teams. There has been some movement, especially in some of those mystical circles. And of course, here we are celebrating Earth Day, 50 years ago, 60 years ago or so, our consciousness connected to the land. Two great mystics, Catholic mystics in the last century, saw the value of Native American spirituality. One was Thomas Merton, again, a mystic and a scholar, who said that if he had Native Americans and indigenous peoples could take him deeper into his own Catholic faith. And Matthew Fox, who was thrown out of the Catholic Church because he dared to extol the rights of gay folks and women, and he was also expelled because he was working too closely with Native Americans. Matthew Fox said the power of Native religions to regenerate Christianity and to reconnect the old religion with the prophetic good news of the Gospels has yet to be tapped. And even our Congress got involved in this, and I've got to bring this up because this is something I think is lost to most of us. On the 200th anniversary of our Constitution in the 1980s, Congress passed this resolution. I'm just going to read part of it. Whereas the original founders of the Constitution, including most notably George Washington and Benjamin Franklin, are known to have greatly admired the concepts, principles, and governmental policies of the six nations of the Iroquois Confederacy. The original 13 colonies into one republic was explicitly modeled on the Iroquois Confederacy. How many of us were taught that in school? That our country, basically the imprint of our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution, came from Native Americans. And today we're seeing some movement as well. No longer hearing about the Washington Redskins or the Cleveland Indians, right? There's a movement as well as America delves into its shadow. We as Americans are a different people. We've always been a different people, and not simply because white Europeans were pushed from the bonds of their monarchs and their kings, or even the fact that black Africans were pushed here as slaves, and that was our original sin, or that we are a melting pot of many different cultures and nations. It's because of the consciousness that is in the land. You know, this is kind of a concept. We covered it in our One Mind class last fall, where consciousness is absolutely elemental. To think for a moment that there is consciousness or memory in the land and in the sea and in the air of America. But we as Americans could not help but be implicated, or I should say, affected by the very consciousness that the nation and the land holds. Glenn Perry, I think, says it best. This land has always spoken of America's sacred purpose, to find unity and diversity. It is these seeds to which the nation yearns to see fully realized, effectively completing a circle back to our origin, if you will. Now, this is going to sound confusing to the Western mind because we see time as linear, but not Native Americans. They observe that nature always unfolded in a circle, from seed to root to bud to fruit and back to seed again, in preparation for the next cycle. Our country is unfolding in the same way. You know, there's an ancient Hopi prophecy. The Hopi Nation, located now out west in Arizona and New Mexico. And it goes something like this. They were told that they would be overcome by strange people. They would be forced to develop their land and lives according to the dictates of a new ruler, or else they would be treated as criminals and punished. But they were not to resist. They were told to look to the east and await the return of the great white brother. Today, the Hopi tribe, the people of peace, still await the Hopi's beneficent lost white brother known as Pahana, because Pahana will come back and bring with him a missing section of a sacred Hopi tablet and deliver them from their persecutors and work out with them a new and universal brotherhood of man. Could it be that the elevation of our consciousness, new thought, the mysticism found in every religion, could that be the missing puzzle piece? Is that the missing puzzle piece that begs to be inserted into this sacred stone? Does this hold the key to America's future as its sacred purpose? So, no, the British Crown couldn't possibly have known what Benjamin Franklin and the other colonists were going to experience when they went out to the frontier. They had no idea that by being exposed to a free and egalitarian society, this is what would set the spark for Americans to set themselves apart. And, you know, just looking at some great Americans, and this comes from another great book called The American Soul by Jacob Needleman. He suggests that people such as William Penn and George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, and especially Abraham Lincoln later, embodied a faith in the unifying peacemaking power latent in the human heart and mind. So too, the American Indian seems to have largely understood the power of this inner light. They realized how important it was to put their hopes in just this kind of power as opposed to the power of kings. The greater realization of Native American contribution to the soul of America, according to, again, author Glenn Perry, may serve as a catalyst in speeding things up, uncovering the shadow side of America that has previously remained concealed, and show us what needs to be changed. And not a moment too soon. As modern-day Native American Red Hawk has stated, they thought they had killed us all off, but we are still here. And now you need us again because you have lost your way. Let's take a moment to go inside. Take a deep breath on this Earth Day, on this great interconnectedness web of life. In this great place of unity, this place that, to me, demonstrates our unity and diversity. Let's breathe deeply with our feet on sacred earth. This was the land of the Chesapeake, after all. This is the land of Native American consciousness. Not all good, not all the time, but so much to teach us in this nation. So breathe deeply. Feel that connection with the earth, with the sky, with the waters of America, of our fellow man, thankful for every consciousness that has walked this land, especially to those who came first. For this we are thankful. For this we look towards the future. We look towards a sacred.